Mr. Ledbetter's Vacation by H.G. Wells. My friend, Mr. Ledbetter, is a round-faced little man, whose natural mildness of eye is gigantically exaggerated when you catch the beam through his glasses, and whose deep, deliberate voice irritates irritable people. A certain elaborate clearness of enunciation has come with him to his present vicarage from his scholastic days, an elaborate clearness of enunciation, and a certain nervous determination to be firm and correct upon all issues, important and unimportant alike. He is a sacerdotalist and a chess player, and suspected by many of the secret practice of the higher mathematics, creditable rather than interesting things. His conversation is copious and given much to needless detail. By many, indeed, his intercourse is condemned, to put it plainly, as boring, and such have even done me the compliment to wonder why I countenance him. But, on the other hand, there is a large faction who marvel at his countenancing such a disheveled, discreditable acquaintance as myself. Few appear to regard our friendship with equanimity. But that is because they do not know of the link that binds us, of my amiable connection via Jamaica with Mr. Ledbetter's past. About that past he displays an anxious modesty. "I do not know what I should do if it became known," he says, and repeats, impressively, "I do not know what I should do. As a matter of fact, I doubt if he would do anything except get very red about the ears. But that will appear later. Nor will I tell here of our first encounter, since, as a general rule, though I am prone to break it, the end of a story should come after, rather than before, the beginning. And the beginning of the story goes a long way back. Indeed, it is now nearly 20 years since fate, by a series of complicated and startling maneuvers, brought Mr. Ledbetter, so to speak, into my hands. In those days I was living in Jamaica, and Mr. Ledbetter was a schoolmaster in England. He was in orders, and already recognizably the same man that he is today. The same rotundity of visage, the same or similar glasses, and the same faint shadow of surprise in his resting expression. He was, of course, disheveled when I saw him, and his collar less of a collar than a wet bandage, and that may have helped to bridge the natural gulf between us. But of that, as I say later. The business began at Hithergate-on-Sea, and simultaneously with Mr. Ledbetter's summer vacation. Thither he came for a greatly needed rest, with a bright brown portmanteau marked F.W.L., a new white and black straw hat, and 2 pairs of white flannel trousers. He was naturally exhilarated at his release from school, for he was not very fond of the boys he taught. After dinner he fell into a discussion with a talkative person established in the boarding house to which, acting on the advice of his aunt, he had resorted. This talkative person was the only other man in the house. Their discussion concerned the melancholy disappearance of wonder and adventure in these latter days, the prevalence of globe-trotting, the abolition of distance by steam and electricity, the vulgarity of advertisement, the degradation of men by civilization, and many such things. Particularly was the talkative person eloquent on the decay of human courage through security, a security Mr. Ledbetter rather thoughtlessly joined him in deploring. Mr. Ledbetter, in the first delight of emancipation from duty, and being anxious, perhaps, to establish a reputation for manly conviviality, partook, rather more freely than was advisable, of the excellent whiskey the talkative person produced. But he did not become intoxicated, he insists. He was simply eloquent beyond his sober wont, and with the finer edge gone from his judgment. And after that long talk of the brave old days that were past forever, he went out into moonlit Hithergate, alone and up the cliff road where the villas cluster together. He had bewailed, and now as he walked up the silent road he still bewailed, the fate that had called him to such an uneventful life as a pedagogue's. What a prosaic existence he led, so stagnant, so colorless. Secure, methodical, year in, year out, what call was there for bravery? He thought enviously of those roving medieval days, so near and so remote, of quests and spies and condottieri, and many a risky blade-drawing business. And suddenly came a doubt, a strange doubt, springing out of some chance thought of tortures, and destructive altogether of the position he had assumed that evening. Was he Mr. Ledbetter, really after all, so brave as he assumed? Would he really be so pleased to have railways, policemen, and security vanish suddenly from the earth? The talkative man had spoken enviously of crime. "The burglar," he said, "is the only true adventurer left on earth. Think of his single-handed fight against the whole civilized world." And Mr. Ledbetter had echoed his envy. "They do have some fun out of life," Mr. Ledbetter had said, "and about the only people who do. Just think how it must feel to wire a lawn." And he had laughed wickedly. Now, in this franker intimacy of self-communion, he found himself instituting a comparison between his own brand of courage and that of the habitual criminal. He tried to meet these insidious questionings with blank assertion. "I could do all that," said Mr. Ledbetter. "I long to do all that. Only I do not give way to my criminal impulses. My moral courage restrains me." But he doubted even while he told himself these things. Mr. Ledbetter passed a large villa standing by itself.